Yeah, well, so are you. No, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. You're an idiot. Just be quiet. Just go. I don't want to even look at you right now.
I'm sorry. I'm having an argument with myself. This is embarrassing.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be quiet.
Whatever.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Thank you for having my back. That didn't sound good, did it? That sounded awkward. Thank you for having my back. I've heard of thank you for having my children. That, you know, that's acceptable. But thank you for having my back. Hey, you're welcome. And thank you for having my front. That was nice, too. But my back really thanks you. Thank you for having my back. And thank you for having my arms. I'd like them back. I'd like them back. Get it? Oh, my. This is starting out all wrong. Let's start again. Hi, welcome to the program. I'm Ron Van Dam. I'm your host. Pleasure to be with you on this fine day. Hope you're feeling well. Good, that's nice. Ooh. Later on in the program, we have an expert with the American Trucking something, and we're going to find out what spots in the country are the worst for traffic. Where are there the most traffic jams? What's the worst place to drive traffic-wise? Some of those spots in the top 10 are actually in New England, from whence this show emanates. So that'll be interesting. I urge you to stay till the very end of the show today for a change. Thank you so much. I assume you stay with me through the entire show. Why would I think otherwise? Because you have my back. Anyway, it's snowing outside as I am doing this show right now, this particular episode. It is snowing. The forecast was supposed to be a couple of inches of little powdery stuff. My driveway this morning was plowed. There was 4 inches of snow in there, and another two have probably already accumulated. So that forecast was a little bit lame. We have our own weather forecaster, Jim Clambaker, who updates us now on the snow situation. Jim.
Hey, everybody, this is Jim Clambaker with your New England Broadcasting Weather Outlook. You know, weather watchers, there are two phrases you never want to hear. That's not a rash, and there's more snow on the way. And while I may not know what to do about those red spots on your hiney, it looks like Mother Nature's prescription involves shoving several more inches of snow right on up there. Sure, you've already got a couple of feet of packed powder pouring out of every available orifice, and the snowbanks on your driveway would take out the Titanic, but break out the lube and pucker up, Buttercup, because here it comes again. Why we haven't all jammed ourselves into a fleet of RVs and bolted for warmer climates and left this godforsaken frozen tundra to fend for itself is beyond me. Oh, wait, that's right, they keep canceling flights. I should be in Bangkok right now having my houseboy freshen up my cocktail and repack my bong, but no, I'm sitting here staring at weather patterns for hours on end, and believe me, at this stage of the game, what they seem to be spelling out is about one letter away from telling me to go on a freaking killing spree. Be a meteorologist in New England, they said. It'll be fun, they said. Well, they'll be the first to go when James Emerson Clambaker III has had enough. This is Jim Clambaker with your New England Broadcasting Weather Outlook. Now back to Ron Van Dam, who I love.
Love you too, Jim. Wow. I want to go out of my way to say, look how far out of my way I went. I'm all the way over here now. I want to go out of my way to thank some people that make this show possible. First of all, you. Sometimes. Then Jason Shaw, who composes and performs much of the original music on this program, such as our opening theme. That's his original, Jason Shaw. Thank you so much for contributing to this show. You're a gem among men. I don't know what that meant. Also, John Shanahan, who does much of the comedy stuff, the sketches, the introductions, and all that kind of funny stuff that you hear. That's not me. That's John Shanahan, one of the most creative people I know. Granted, I don't know a lot of people, but still, right up there. All our British friends and Julie and all those that helped me with the opening of the show. And there are other people behind the scenes that do things for me. Sponge bath, for example. One of my interns gave me a sponge bath and then reported back to the university. Now I'm under investigation. So that didn't work out too well. Topical. It's topical. Topical humor. That's what I do. I do topical humor. So later on in the show, we talked to a very interesting individual about traffic. Anyway, okay, you go now. You talk. See, it's not that easy, is it? Okay, now you talk incessantly. Go on. It's funny, you know, when you're face-to-face with somebody in a room, sitting on a couch, you don't shut up, do you? When there's a television show I want to watch, you just don't shut up. However, when I turn the microphone towards you and I say, okay, go now, you talk, which you seem to be able to do quite easily, all of a sudden, nothing comes out of your mouth. Isn't that bizarre? Isn't that odd how that happens? Me, I'm the opposite. If you put me into a party situation, give me a cocktail so I'm happy, I'll just stand there like a deaf mute. Ron, I thought you were so entertaining. You do the show, you're a funny guy, your mind never seems to stop, your mouth is flapping like some kind of a dress in a subway blower. I don't even know what that is, Ron, but yeah. And then, you know, you go to a party and you just stand there. What's that about? Well, I'm the opposite of you. You put a microphone in front of my face, I won't shut up. You put me out in public, I won't say a word. Do you know why? Because in public, there are people involved. Ooh, okay, you've made your point. People are all over the place. Have you noticed that recently? Wherever you go out somewhere, there's people around. You go to a store. I'm going to a store to buy something. I want to make a purchase for something that I need. But when I go out in the store, there's people all over the place. They're walking around, they're buying stuff too, but there's people involved. Then you got to go to the register and you have to deal with another person who checks you out at the register. I mean, there's always these people all over the place. They walk amongst us. When did that start, man? All of a sudden, there's people all over the place. You go to a doctor's office, you walk in. Why do you walk into a doctor's office? Because you want to be seen by the doctor for a checkup, because you're not feeling well, whatever the case may be, you're there to see the doctor. But what happens? You walk into the doctor's office, there's people there. There's people there. They're sitting down on couches and chairs, they're coughing and sneezing, they're dressed like they're a flea circus. They look horrible. There's people all over the place. God, You get on a train, you know, a commuter train or a subway or something, and all you want to do is you want to go into the city, you want to have some fun, and you get on the train. What's the people? There's people all over the place on the same subway car, on the same train car. People scattered all over the place. Kind of people, all kinds of people, people I don't know. Wouldn't it be so bad if I somewhat knew them, if they were acquaintances or Facebook friends or something? But they're not. They're people I don't know. What am I supposed to say to them? They're in my way. They're crowding me. How can I have my personal space when there's so many people around? I got in a car yesterday. I had to go to the gas station because my car was running low on gas. That's a problem. When you have a car, the idea of the car is to go from place to place, right? Huh? Yeah. But when you get on the road, there's cars all over the place. All I want to do is go to the gas station and put more gas in my car. That's all I wanted to do. But as soon as I get on the road, there's other cars on the road. Now I have to deal with other cars. I'm telling you. All right, Ron, that's enough. We get the idea. You don't like people. You made a joke about it. It was very funny. How long do we have to listen to this? All right, I'm done. I'm done with that. I'm done. I'm finished. God. But thanks for having my back. I appreciate that. One of my favorite television shows, and this is odd, I didn't really like this show until I got older. And what older is, it doesn't really matter the age. It's not the point. It's just older than I was previously. Yesterday. I'm older every day. That's really fascinating. Wouldn't it be great if you woke up in the morning and said, whoa, I'm younger than I was yesterday. Wouldn't that be exhilarating? Wouldn't that be, that'd be a good day, wouldn't it? But every day you get up and, oh, I'm older than I was yesterday. How long can this go on? Well, not forever. Okay. Anyway, so I'm watching TV, and I love this House Hunters. Have you seen this show? It's on HGTV. What does that mean? Home and Garden Television. And it's about these people, these couples, sometimes hetero, sometimes gay, doesn't really matter. And they're not happy with where they're living, or they're looking for their first place, or living in an apartment, and they want their first place. So on this show, these people are hunting for houses. It's a half an hour show. And you see them look at three houses, and they go through it, and they go, oh, I really would like a double sink. Oh, my God, this isn't granite countertop in the kitchen. I really would have to replace this, and that would cost me money. So this house is above my budget. And, oh, this there's no closet space here. You know, it's all these people complaining about houses they don't even own yet. It's like a complaint tour. Let's show you houses so you can complain about what you're looking at. Okay, sounds like fun. Maybe we'll see a house we like. Probably not. So it's fun. I mean, who doesn't like to do that? Who doesn't like to look at houses that maybe I could live in, but probably I won't? My father did this. I think I've told you this before if you've gone far back enough with me, if you've had my back for long enough. My father, when I was a little child, like 8, 9 years old, my father had a very disturbing hobby. No, not that. I know what you're thinking. No, it wasn't. Well, it could have been. I just wasn't aware of it. My father had this hobby, and looking back at it, it's like it was not a good hobby. He loved to doodle around with architecture. He would like to redesign houses and things like that. And you know, he had this little graph paper, and he would sketch out rooms and stuff. And I mean, he's very talented. And, you know, that was his hobby, though. He wasn't in the business for that. It was just his hobby thing. And every once in a while, he would call up a real estate agent and say, I'm interested in moving, but he never was. He never was. And he'd make this real estate agent take out our whole family on a Sunday and show us homes. And these real estate agents would think, oh, here's a family that really wants to move and put their house on the market. No, we never did. We just had nothing to do on a Sunday and wanted to take up your time and look at people's houses. That's just my trick. How else do you get into people's homes but get a real estate agent and take us inside? Let's see how other people live. That sounds like fun on a Sunday. That's what we did every once in a while. And even at 8 years old, I was saying to myself, this is kind of not right. These real estate agents think that they're going to get a sale here or business, and My father has no intention of doing that. He's just taking up your valuable time. He's sucking out the time from the real estate agent so he can have something to do on a Sunday. And he takes the whole family with him. And I thought that was, even at 8 years old, I thought, my father sucks. He wasn't a horrible man. I never understood this hobby that he had of taking up real estate agents' time to look at houses that he would never buy. What is your budget, Mr. Van Damme? $7 million. Show me $7 million homes. I got nothing else to do on a Sunday. All right. You're serious? Yeah, sure, I'm serious. I'm going to take my whole family as well. You mind? We got nothing to do. it's Sunday, real estate agent. You got nothing better to do, do you? It was awful. But I also started to get an interest in how other people live in their homes, how they decorate their houses, what they do with their rooms, things like that, how houses are configured. I started to get somewhat interested. I've never wasted a real estate agent's time, but I did find that quite fascinating. So I like watching this show, House Hunters, where the couples look for a house. And then at the end, they have three houses to choose from, and they choose a house, and then they show you what it's like a few months later when they moved in. And it's a fun, fun thing. You get to find out what real estate prices are, what kind of homes are being offered in various parts of the country geographically. So it's interesting. Then I come to find out, much to my dismay, that the House Hunters show on HGTV is not a real show. What do you mean it's not a real show, Ron? It's not a real show. It's all staged. It's not really happening. The couples have already they're reenacting. They're not walking into homes and going, "Oh, this house is nice," or "Oh, this house doesn't have any closet space." They've already bought their house. They're just walking through the house, making believe. And some of these couples are pretty good actors because you think they're seeing the houses for the first time that they're looking at, but they're not. They've already bought their house. So I thought, okay, House Hunters isn't real. It's just reenactments of houses that they looked at. No, it's not even that. Apparently, and I'm going to read this, viewers of House Hunters are very disappointed in crying, "Say it ain't so." A participant on the show, House Hunters, revealed that show was fake. In 2012, Bobby Jensen wrote a blog post on Hooked on Houses, that's the name of the blog, and let everyone know that the series was totally scripted. Jensen said that they started filming the episode after she purchased her home, well after she purchased her home. She then explained that the houses that they looked at on the show, they acted like they were interested in the houses, but they never were. In fact, those houses weren't even on the market, and they actually belonged to their friends. They were actually looking at their friends' houses. They weren't even ever for sale. They just were looking, they were just shooting people looking at houses, making me believe that there was a house for sale, but it wasn't. It was somebody else's house. It was never even for sale. Oh my God. This is like finding out that Santa Claus is not Jewish. Yeah, I know. I know. Sad, but true. So, ever since I read that, I still watch House Hunters, but it's totally ruined it for me. Totally ruined it. That's like finding out that your spouse is really a dentist. It's crushing. Here's the other thing about Home and Garden Television. Since the 90s, Home and Garden Television has been giving away a dream house. It's the HGTV greenhouse. Dream house. It's not a greenhouse. It's a dream house. What the hell's wrong with me? It's a dream house. It's a beautiful house, usually in the Rockies somewhere with the view of mountains, and it's lavish, and it costs millions and millions and millions of dollars, and a lucky couple wins the dream house. It's quite a prize. And we watch it on television, and we see the dream house on television and how wonderful and beautiful it is. And this couple wins the dream house. I don't know how, but they win it. And they're the winners of the year. and they get to move into the dream house and they live there, and it's their house. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, wonderful for them. Fine. Come to find out, another HGTV scandal. Since the 90s, Home and Garden Television has been giving away one dream home a year to its sweepstakes winners. However, winning the lavish home doesn't come without expenses. So congratulations, you won a nice home, but here's the kicker. The estimated property taxes for this beautiful home, 2016 property taxes were $693,000. The couple that won the house didn't have jobs like that. They couldn't afford the property tax annually, so they had to sell the house. And here's the funny part. Most winners of these Home and Garden TV dream houses, these sweepstake winners, have sold their houses because they couldn't afford the property taxes for the house. You have to pay those. The show doesn't pay for the property tax. It just pays for the house. So they're just selling the homes and footing the cash. Another fact that just dashed like a cigarette being stamped out in my crotch. Same feeling. Well, cigarette in the crotch would probably be a little more impactful than this, but nonetheless, I was trying to make a point. Okay, how you doing, by the way? You all right? Are you okay so far? You want to take a little break? Maybe we should take a little break. I have a feeling I'm exhausting you today. Because you're exhausting me, I got to tell you. Yeah. You hungry? Are you hungry?
First, they put jalapenos on your hamburger. But that wasn't hot enough. Then came habaneros, but still, that wasn't hot enough. Next came the ghost pepper, and still, that was not hot enough for you. Well, buckle up, tough guy, because Burger Guy thinks you're not man enough to handle the heat of our new sweet flaming mother of heaven. What the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger? Featuring two of Burger Guy's signature paper-thin patties topped with an experimental hot sauce made from a concentrated hot pepper extract that has only been approved for military use by North Korea. This burger will burn a hole through every inch of your intestines and then slap your mama on its way out for good measure. This burger is so hot they wouldn't let us test it on prisoners. Death row prisoners. But for a limited time, you can try your luck at your local Burger Guy if you're not a complete pussy.
All purchases of the sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger, must be pre-approved by a certified attorney at law with proper notification of next of kin. Sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger must not be consumed within 500 yards of schools or within 1,000 yards of open flame. All Burger Guy franchisees reserve the right to ignore cries for mercy or requests for immediate medical attention.
There's also a show on Home and Garden Television called Tiny Houses. Have you seen this one? These people who live in fairly big houses, fairly big expensive houses, like 3,000 square feet or something, they decide all of a sudden that they want to live in a tiny house. Now, they don't just want to downsize. They want to make believe they're Tom Thumb. And usually the husband part of this couple is usually like 6 feet tall, a good-sized man. And yet he and his wife, these weird people, decide, I want to live in a tiny house. And the tiny house is no more than the size of a walk-in closet. I'm serious. These tiny little, where the guy has to duck down just to go to the bathroom. It's just, it's weird. And they seem to be excited about this. I want to live in a house where I can't turn around. I want to live in a house where I have to go outside to change my mind. I want to live in a house where I can't even have sex with my wife because I can't move my elbows. That's where I want to live. I want to live in a place where I have to contort myself, like in order to go to the bath. I want to take a bath in a thimble. I want to inconvenience myself so much that. I mean, what if you were in an accident and you had a back injury? I mean, how could you fit in this house? Some of them want to live in these tiny little houses because they can be mobile. They can move them to other places if they want to. To which I say, why don't you just live in a mobile home? No, that's too easy. I want to live in a place where, I want to live in a cardboard box. Why don't you just become homeless and live on the street somewhere in a box? Is that what you're looking for? Is that what you want in your life? As most people are trying to get the nicest living space they can get for the best price they can get, you want to torture yourself on a daily basis with somebody that you love. You know, free-range chickens have more room than you do. All right, that's enough. Let's speak to our guest now. We're going to talk about the busiest roads in America, the worst traffic situations in this country. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Great. Rebecca Brewster joins us. She's president and COO of the American Transportation Research Institute. And we're talking about, the most congested locations in the United States traffic-wise.
That's right. This is our list of our annual list of the worst truck bottlenecks in the country.
Okay.
That we develop using truck GPS data from over 800,000 trucks.
Okay, and we're assuming that truck bottlenecks are also car bottlenecks.
I tell everybody that. At these locations, if trucks are moving that slowly, cars are moving that slowly as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. How is this information gathered?
Well, we, for a number of years now, have been collecting truck GPS data from over 800,000 commercial trucks. It comes into ATRI real time, and we use that data to do a number of analyses. But for this particular list, we look at 300 specific locations around the country, freight significant locations, and we look at how slowly trucks are operating, so that's below posted speed limit because of congestion, but also how many trucks are impacted at each location. And so those two factors, speed and volume, go into this annual calculation we do of the top 100 worst places.
Okay. Can we take a little peek into what some of the worst of them are?
Well, absolutely. Number one is in my hometown of Atlanta. It's an area we call Spaghetti Junction, and it's actually been the number one location for the third year in a row now, so things are not getting any better for us. But you've got your own problems in
New England,
in the Boston area as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, what are those?
Your first one comes up at position number six at I-95 at I-90, and... Average truck speeds there during the rush hour, and again, if trucks are going this slow, cars are as well. Average truck speeds are about 33 miles per hour there during rush hour. The good news is that we looked at year-over-year changes, and for that particular location, over last year's report, speeds have increased about 7%.
You know, it's interesting when the highway departments or whatever try to widen the roads or make the intersections better, it takes like 3 years for them to do it, and that causes even worse congestion because there's construction going on.
That's a great point, and we've seen that. The number three location on the list is an area in Chicago called the Burn Interchange, and it was our number one location for a number of years when we first started doing this, to the point where the state of Illinois decided to redesign it. So that construction's underway, and it's still number three on the list because that construction creates congestion. But ultimately, when that project is complete, we would expect to see it go down the list.
Yeah. And it's very important for certainly people in pedestrian cars to get where they're going to work and such. But for truckers, I mean, this makes a big impact on industry and on timely deliveries. And that costs money when there's congestion, doesn't it?
It does indeed. We've calculated industry costs of over $63 billion as a result of congestion.
Wow.
And that comes from about, again, looking at the GPS data, about 996 million hours of lost productivity in a year.
Yeah.
That's the same as 362,000 truck drivers sitting still for an entire year, not going anywhere.
Right, deliveries that aren't made and inefficient time on the road. My greatest wonder of life has to do with traffic. When you're on an open highway and all of a sudden it stops, or you know, there's 10 miles an hour for a couple of miles, and then you always expect to see an accident up ahead or some flashing lights. But in many cases, all of a sudden, there are no off-ramps, there are no on-ramps. It just, all of a sudden, is clear. Has anybody ever figured that out?
Well, Ron, oftentimes that's a residual from when there may have been an incident. It actually does take quite a bit of time for those incidents, even once they're cleared, for the traffic flow to return to normal.
I see.
But it can also be the result of just someone maneuvering incorrectly on the roadway and creating other drivers to do sort of reactive things that slow everybody down.
Yeah, like passing someone who's going 10 miles an hour.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I've always wanted to drive a truck because I feel like I would be high enough to see everything that's going on for miles ahead, but I guess that's not true.
there's certainly a different vantage point when you're behind the wheel of an 18-wheeler.
Yeah. You guys did something really cool last year, and I remember doing an interview with your faction, and that the public could get up into a truck cab and feel what it was like, and I thought that was really good. It gives the public an appreciation for how difficult it is to drive and see those huge vehicles.
It's a great way for four-wheelers, as we call them, mm-hmm. car drivers, to appreciate the blind spots that truck drivers have, in hopes that car drivers will maneuver more safely around those large commercial vehicles.
Hmm. I would guess that all the time you're lobbying various cities and towns to make things more efficient.
Well, certainly at ATRI we do the research. We don't do the lobbying, but we hope that this list will be used as a tool for those who can make decisions about infrastructure investment to really target those investments on these most egregious choke points.
Yeah. How did our friends in Rhode Island do?
Well, they've got a fair share of the top bottlenecks as well. Their highest one comes in at number 31 in Providence.
Wow. How do trucks make it through New York? I'm not talking about New York State. I'm talking about getting like from the Bronx to Jersey or something. I mean, how do they even get through that? I can't figure it out.
And they've got both New York and New Jersey have several of our top bottlenecks including the George Washington Bridge, which is number two for the third year in a row.
Wow.
That entire I-95 corridor really is a challenging place for trucks to operate because of congestion. There's such high population densities. All that drives consumer demand for the goods that are on trucks. And so it's a perfect storm. A lot of people wanting lots of goods. Creates lots of traffic.
And those roads are never repaired, never paved. I mean, it's like, it's amazing that there is a road in some locations in the Bronx, et cetera.
Well, Ron, it's a great point because poorly maintained infrastructure creates slowdowns as well.
Yeah.
People aren't going to drive through roads where there are a lot of potholes.
No.
They're not going to drive through quickly through there. So that also slows traffic.
It's awful. All right, how do we get more information about this?
Ron, the entire list is available on our website. It's truckingresearch.org.
Truckingresearch.org. Rebecca, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Wow. Makes me not want to drive anymore. I'm out of time for today. You're out of patience, so I think that kind of works for both of us. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace. Go forth now and multiply.